And welcome. I'm Kevin Annett. This is Here We Stand. It's October 22nd. Cead Míle Fáilte Ruadh. In the language of my Gaelic ancestors, that means a thousand welcomes to you all. That song, actually, Cíomhaí na Móibríne, was played at the end of the last show. And people asked, well, what is it? What does it mean? Cíomhaí na Móibríne means my misty mountains of home. And here are some of the words to the song. I shall visit the place of my birth and will be warmly welcomed there by the women and the men who are ever constant and true and ever ready to welcome me home. And I think a lot of us these days recognize that we're going home. There's a big separation happening among the human race, and some of us are going to where we're meant to go, and others are just stuck in this reality. So we are standing on the ground of those who are seeking their real home, a better home, a future world. And we've always known in our life that we're not meant to be in the conditions of this. We're meant to bring in new conditions and create that new home here in the old, in the shell of the old. Our topic last week and this week here on Here We Stand was home rule, both political and spiritual home rule. And for you new listeners, you can find us here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, at bbsradio.com/herewestand, carrying on from our former show, Radio Free Canada. Follow our work at itccs.org. And the theme of last week, of course, we had Judy Wen Chizin on. She was a leader of the movement in Pennsylvania for home rule based on communities trying to stop wastewater fracking that is poisoning their land. And the corporatocracy of the combination of the PGE, a big company, working with the Pennsylvania government to smash local communities and enforce their desecration and toxicity on them. So Judy was supposed to be back on the air today. Unfortunately, she came down ill this last week, and she's recovering. We wish her well and our prayers. And she'll be back again, of course. But in her place, we're going to have actually more of a background for the whole issue of the home rule struggle in Pennsylvania. We're going to feature an interview with Chad Nicholson, who's one of the organizers working with Judy and the others in Grant Township, Pennsylvania. Chad Nicholson is with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. That's CEDLF.org, if you want to look up their site. CELDF works with local communities to bring in not only home rule charters to allow the community to defend their land and their rights, but also to ensure the rights of nature. This is a whole new legal body developing, and it's really interesting. So he'll be on briefly from an interview last May he did with RT Television. That's Russia Today Television. Also today, we are going to have featured a recap of how we actually do struggles and do our battles with our eyes fully open. In other words, on both the spiritual and political front. It's going to be later in the show a short clip of a lecture I gave called The Purpose and Nature of Our Struggle, looking into what's really behind the scenes in the supposed enemies and issues that we look at every day. First of all, some announcements. And this went out this last week to anyone in the New York City area. That's New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New England. If you all want to come down to New York City, one of the few remaining black bookstores left in New York City, it's called Sisters Uptown Bookstore and Cultural Center. It's up in north of Harlem. This bookstore is now carrying copies of all of my recent books, along with earlier works, including all of the titles that you know of, like Murder by Decree, Truth Teller Shield, all of those books that you can find on Amazon. They are now carrying these books on consignment. So please urge your friends to patronize this important bookshop and obtain our books there. Books on child abuse, genocide, human rights, and the common law community organizing movement. So that also, the same bookstore, Sisters Uptown, is sponsoring a public event later in November featuring us speakers veteran civil rights activist Colia Clark and other people in our New York branch. That event is going to be held at Saturday, November 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the bookstore. That's at 1942 Amsterdam Avenue at 156th Street. So again, Sisters Uptown Bookstore, Saturday, November 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at 1942 Amsterdam Avenue, 156th Street in New York. And another announcement, equally as important, we are this next week we're going to be, our show is a very important one because it shows that we're leading up to the, of course, we've been talking about the anniversary of the Reformation for some time, very important event, but leading up to that on October 29th, there was a release put out by the Covenanters. This is a covenant of free congregational Christians who are trying to break people away from these false, murderous, genocidal churches like the Catholic Church, the Church of England, the United Church of Canada, and others that we've indicted in common law court. The Covenanters put out this statement, which you can see up at itccs.org and kevinanna.com. It just went up there today. And what it says is, let me just read it out. Since 2013, the churches of Rome, of England, and of Canada have been convicted of unspeakable crimes against children and humanity. Under both man's law and the law of God, they have been declared criminal bodies and their authority has been nullified. The curtain of judgment has fallen on not only these churches, but upon all those who remain within them. It's time for all people of conscience and of Christ to leave forever these false and murderous churches. So commencing at sunrise on Sunday, October 29th, that's next week, all people are invited to enter into 48 hours of prayer, fasting, and spiritual separation from the satanic churchly powers. On October 31st, the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, Christ's people will assemble in new congregations apart from these powers and their worldly churches. And so we call upon all members or adherents of the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches of Canada to begin this process of inner and outer cleansing by ceasing and desisting from funding or associating with these criminal churches. Fast and separate with us and return to Christ alone and declare this intention by filling out the Pledge of Conscience listed below and sharing it with your family and church members. And the Pledge of Conscience reads, and this is to be filled out and dropped in the collection plate, I, and then your name, after prayer and in good faith, hereby pledge to dissociate myself from this church and to deny it all attendance, funding, and adherence. I do so because of its criminal conviction as a genocidal child-killing institution that has betrayed God and humanity and thereby forfeited all legitimacy, rights, and authority. I also pledge by this separation to pursue my faith in the company of others who have or who will take this pledge. So help me God. So you can see that at itccs.org. It's a way to take direct action. And, of course, on the 31st, that will be followed by other actions at the church that we'll be talking about next Sunday. And finally, before we listen to the brief interview with Chad Nicholson the on RT television, just to remind folks that leading up to next week's show, we're going to be continuing to hold meetings across Canada, Constitutional Convention meetings, to talk about a constitution for the new common law republic. And this will be going into more detail, of course. But don't forget, one little point to put out there. One of the people we're going to quote, of course, is Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who wrote a very important book called The Social Contract. And in that, Rousseau mentions that in a republic, you don't elect people as your representatives. There's no such thing as representation. You establish agents who are under contract, and if those agents don't do what you want, they can be removed at any point. You don't ever hand over your sovereignty or authority to another person in a so-called democracy. So that's one of the issues we're going to be debating about in these constitutional conventions, and we'll be having more information on that next week. So without further ado, we're going to go to this brief interview with Chad Nicholson, entitled Civil Disobedience Just Became a Civic Duty. This is from a news clip from RT TV last May, and we'll be back after listening to this.
For tonight's Green Report, we go to Grant Township, Pennsylvania, where civil disobedience just became a protected civil duty. In November of 2015, Grant Township successfully fought off the Pennsylvania General Energy Company and the Pennsylvania Independent Oil and Gas Association which were claiming that fossil fuel companies had a right to inject wastewater. The township successfully passed the country's first municipal charter, establishing a local bill of rights that made environmental and democratic rights an official part of that city's code. But in a big move earlier this week, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDEF, organized with Grant Township residents to pass an ordinance that says if a court does not uphold the people's right to stop corporate activities threatening the well-being of the community, any natural person may then enforce the rights and prohibitions of the charter through direct action. For more on this, we're joined now by Chad Nicholson, community organizer with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. Chad, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Great to have you here with us. So how did all this start between the Pennsylvania General Energy Company and the Pennsylvania Independent Oil and Gas Association and Grant Township?
Yeah, it goes back a few years at this point. And first, I wanted to acknowledge the people of Grant Township for their tireless and courageous efforts. They've been fighting off this project for going on 3 years at this point, and it's been an honor to work with them.
Is the project a fracking project?
It's for a wastewater injection well. Ah. So it is basically set up to take the waste produced by fracking projects.
So they want to pump the radioactive and chemically poisonous stuff into the water of this township.
Exactly.
Or
so
into the ground of this township.
There's an old production well in the township, and the company, Pennsylvania General Energy, wants to reverse the flow of that well and inject the wastewater that's produced by fracking operations in other parts of the state. Right. So the frack wastewater can contain toxic contaminants like toluene, benzene, cancer-causing agents. It can be radioactive after it comes out of the ground. We've seen in other states like Ohio, Oklahoma, California, it's actually caused earthquakes. So it's a nasty process. It has a lot of immediate harms facing the community. They found out about it in 2013. Pennsylvania General Energy had applied for a permit with the EPA, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, or as our folks call it, the Everything Permitted Agency. The folks in Grant organized against the injection well. They brought people out to public hearings. They wrote public comments. They appealed the EPA's decision. Eventually, as is unfortunately the case in almost all of our communities, the EPA eventually ended up issuing the permit to PGE to actually legalize the injection of toxic frack waste into Grant Township. They found that they had no other legal remedies left at that point. The EPA had sold them out. They got no help from their state or federal legislatures. And so at that point, they got in touch with us. This was early 2014 and said, look, we're out of options. What can we do? And we said that we would be willing to work with them on drafting what's called the Community Bill of Rights, a local law that would prohibit the injection well. And it prohibits it on the basis of the civil and fundamental rights of the people living in that community. So it starts out by actually listing a Bill of Rights, the right to clean air, the right to pure water, rights of nature and ecosystems, the right to self-government. And then it prohibits activities that would actually infringe on and violate those rights. So it's about taking it out of just strictly the environmental stuff, which from our perspective has failed over the last 30 or 40 years at this point, and moving it into a civil rights arena. Right. So PGE promptly sued to overturn that ordinance. They claimed that they had a corporate right to inject, that the permit from the EPA actually gave them the right to inject. And so they said, you know, we're going to come in anyways because we're going to sue to overturn this law. It went to federal court, and we're actually still litigating the case today a couple of years later at this point. And in October of 2015, last year, and just to correct the intro a little bit, in October of 2015, the judge stripped out parts of that ordinance. The judge invalidated it and said that the community didn't have the authority to actually ban injection wells because it was a federally protected right through the EPA for PGE to inject that toxic waste. So the judge said, we can't actually have the authority within communities to stop these harmful activities. So she stripped out the operative parts of that ordinance.
Control.
Exactly. However, 3 weeks later, the folks in Grant Township adopted what's called a home rule charter. It's like a local constitution, and they actually changed their form of municipality. So they had been what's called a second-class township in Pennsylvania, which usually elicits smiles from people because it's really called a second-class township, and it is, and the people living in second-class townships generally feel like second-class citizens in these places. They actually changed their form of government to not be a second-class township anymore, but now to be a home rule municipality. So they adopted this democratically enacted charter, which changed their community from second-class township to home rule, and it asserted the same rights that were in the ordinance, but it actually created a whole new framework to fight from now. So it was voted in by a 2-to-1 vote. It was voted in November of 2015, just 3 weeks after the judge had stripped out the provisions of the ordinance. So the folks in Grant Township looked at the judge's decision, said, we don't feel that's legitimate, and they then voted in another law 3 weeks later that actually reinstated the ban on injection wells. Wow. So that's where we're at today.
And by direct action, we just have about a minute and a half left. By direct action, I'm assuming you're talking about things like standing in front of the oil, the rigs and things like that?
Yes. So the folks in Grant Township didn't wake up on Tuesday morning and say, slap themselves on the head and say, we need a law that legalizes direct action. This is coming at the end of a process where they're finding that the state and federal levels of government and the courts are not actually providing our communities with remedies. And so they've said, if the judge overturns this charter, or if the judge further denies our right to actually protect our community, we are now going to make it a protected right for community members and other people to come into the community and directly enforce our democratically enacted law to protect our rights. And what that means is that it would shield people from arrest. So it says right in the law that no public or private actor can actually bring charges against somebody that's engaging in direct action to stop injection wells. And it says if somebody tries to bring charges, that the court, the relevant court, must immediately dismiss those charges without any further filings. So it's really about continuing to go on the offensive in Grant Township and not accept the federal courts, the state courts, whoever else that's currently telling those people that they don't have a right to stop this. They're saying we do have a right and we are going to stop it and we will do whatever it takes to stop it.
Will you please keep us up to date on this?
Absolutely.
Anytime anything happens with this, let us know. We'll get you back on the air. I want to know more about it.
Great.
Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Tom.
Great to see you.
And we're back. That was an interview from last May. And as you know, if you listened to last week's show when Judy Lynn Chisholm was on, since then, both the government and the PGE company are suing the people of Grand Township. You know, it's often said democracy works until you step on somebody's toes, until you step on big money toes, and then all of the rights go right out the window. Well, here's a perfect example from Pennsylvania of how that happened. The government actually says that this PGE company has the right to inject poison into the watershed of a people community. You have the right to kill our citizens. And the beautiful thing that they've done is, in response, the people have said, no, we are the government ourselves. We are nullifying not only the company's decision, but the court decision, as you heard in that interview. So to me, what's happening in Grand Township is a case study in what we were to do in not only the situation where the entire system is criminal. It's working against us. All normal avenues are closed. We have to create the rule of law. We have to create a new system. So it's a case study in personal, political, and spiritual reclamation. I love the word reformation because it actually means reformation. We are reforming the world according to what's right in the face of a corporate tyranny, which you can see playing out right now, not just in Grand Township, but everywhere. It's in all of our communities. It's affecting us at every level. Now, here's another example of how that's happening. We just got contacted yesterday by a man in a Canadian city. I won't say where yet because we're building a campaign to defend him and his children. Here's yet another example. He tried to report the fact that his two children were being sexually abused in foster care. They reported it. The children reported directly, both of them, that they were being molested by these foster parents. This parent reports it, and he's immediately threatened by the social worker, by the police. Two cops and a psychiatric nurse come to the door and threaten to put him in a mental institute if he continues to complain. Now, he asks the social worker, why aren't you acting on these complaints? And the social worker actually said, because the foster family is friends with the police. Well, this is another example of the criminality of the system, folks, and how the only avenue that exists for us is for us to recreate what we think we live under, which is democracy, and it isn't. We live under a corporatocracy where this can happen to any of us at any point. Now, if you want to contribute to the struggle in Grand Township, and we're going to have Judy and others on, including her daughter, Stacy, again in the near future, but we need you to put your money where your mouth is. If you want to support the struggle, you can send a check. You make it out to the East Run Hellbender Society. Those are separate words, East Run Hellbenders Society. And you send it care of Mark Long, 1900 Mumaw Road, that's M-U-M-A-U Road. Mark Long, 1900 Mumaw Road. Glen Campbell, that, like the name of the singer, Glen Campbell, Pennsylvania, USA 15742. So again, you check East Run Hellbender Society, you make it out to, and send it to Mark Long, 1900 Mumaw Road, M-U-M-A-U Road, Glen Campbell, Pennsylvania, or PA, USA 15742. And get out your checkbook and help those folks. They're going doing an enormous David and Goliath battle on behalf of all of us. Now, leading up to this next clip, we have to ask ourselves some basic questions, and that is, how do we fight? Do we, you know, one of the quotes I like from Judy Wen Chisholm last week was, she said, we didn't really know what we were doing until we began to do it. That is, they had to learn from their experience. They didn't realize what they're up against until they got kicked in the teeth, and then they had to take their own experience seriously and act accordingly, not according to what they had been habitually used to, that is, write your congressman and hope for the system to get on your side. No, they learned that the system doesn't operate anymore. We have to create a new system. You always have to stay one step ahead of your adversary because they've got a lot of money and power. Now, one of the books we want to recommend if you find yourself in a similar situation is our Whistleblower's Manual. Again, you can find that at Amazon.com. Truth Teller Shield, a manual for whistleblowers and hellraisers, gives you the step-by-step procedure of how to take on a big corporate adversary. So I know some of you out there, including the father who's having their kids abused in care, is listening right now. I urge you to get that book, and we'll be talking more about that particular struggle in a bit in future shows. But we, regardless of whether it's frack, wastewater, pollution in Pennsylvania, or the theft of our children anywhere, we're up against this corporate system, and we need to be armed and prepared beforehand. So to do that, we have to understand what we're really up against, a spiritual as well as a political adversary, and the two are really one and the same. And we're going to listen now to a lecture I gave. It's a short 20-minute lecture called The Nature and Purpose of Our Struggle, and it's looking at really the energy signal, the chi, as Sun Tzu in The Art of War calls it, the energy possessed by any system that we have to master in order to overcome it. First, we master our own personal chi, and then we're able to master the chi of an opponent, no matter how big they are. So we're going to listen to this clip, and we'll be back after that for more.
Hello, this is Kevin Annett. My lecture today is entitled The Purpose and Nature of Our Struggle. This is for those listening who have moved from theory and discussion to action. We begin with a quote from Sun Tzu in The Art of War. Whoever grasps and holds onto the essential energy or chi of a situation will control the outcome of any battle and the fate of any opponent, no matter how powerful they are. And from the Book of Corinthians, what is nothing has been chosen to bring to nothing all the things that are. Imagine for a moment the present global tyranny not simply as a visible system of corporatocracy, violence, and corruption, but as a vast energy transfer, sucking the vitality and life from billions of people and the biosphere itself into one massive machine. Call that machine whatever you like. Its nature and behavior is geared towards a single purpose, and that is the absorption of all life into itself. It is one enormous feeder, and we are its morsels. To first understand this simple truth equips us inwardly to stop this insatiable complex and our participation in it, far better than can mere political analysis. But understanding alone does not free us to act. All interactions in our universe involve an essential energy that guides the movement of every particle and determines every outcome. Sun Tzu called this energy qi. Plato saw it as a pre-existing essence behind the mask of appearances. Some people like to call it God. Regardless of its nomenclature, this source that binds our reality is like a mighty river which can either sweep us along helplessly or be utilized by us to alter reality. Every ruler understands this simple fact, even while the rest of us have been trained not to grasp it, and thereby are kept blind in a harness held by a few. Those who understand and utilize this chi are able to control the thoughts and actions of the multitudes of humanity, only as long as the latter are devoid of their own access to chi. The primary means of stripping humanity of attaining this normally inherent power is by using fear and trauma-based conditioning at a very young age to cause people to habitually surrender and defer at every level to some higher external power. and thereby transfer their own particle of chi to that power. Such an unending energy transfer from the many to the few is the basis of all elite rule in our world. And yet, such a system is inherently unstable, since following natural law, the nature of chi, as with any energy system, is to disseminate equally and be held in common, and not privately, a fact that invalidates as contrary to the natural order all individual rule, whether by kings, presidents, popes, or corporate oligarchies. We know from our own experience that the loss of chi from the many to the few is not simply unnatural and disharmonious. It is so constant and systemic that it cannot be resisted by individual effort alone, since our individuality has been conditioned to operate habitually rather than consciously. We think like we eat, automatically, and therefore without chi. For instance, when faced with political repression by the rulers, so-called rulers, our first reflex is to surrender our chi once again to them by pressuring them to give us justice through ritualized protest and petitioning, or relying on their courts and government. We don't seem capable of shifting our attention away from the chi holders simply because we have no working experience of what our own chi actually is. And so, like any lost child, we cannot try to change our world without continually deferring to the so-called powers that be, whether that be a sympathetic judge, or a progressive politician, or even a spiritual advisor. Our imprinted slavery makes it impossible for us to collectively reclaim ourselves and our world. Of course, erasing a conditioned imprint may begin with the individual, but it is not manifested individualistically, but collectively. For collectivity is the nature of universal chi, which binds all phenomena in a mutual garment of destiny and interconnectedness. In any successful revolution, the personal awakening of individuals inexorably causes a collective ripple effect in many other hearts and minds that generates a new kind of group chi or group mind, one that is unalterably opposed to the chi of the rulers. This new energy system is a living and working counterculture that draws energy and power away from the rulers and their system, and returns it to the multitude of the people, provided the people can hold on to it as a group by retaining their own new separate identity. The very nature and purpose of our struggle today is to achieve precisely such a new energy dynamic and allow all of humanity to reclaim their natural chi and the collective liberty that it bestows. This purpose must continually guide all of our thoughts, words, and deeds. Well, how do we apply chi knowledge or chi knowledge to our present situation? The Chinese general Sun Tzu, writing thousands of years ago, had the best practical understanding of how such an awareness of the essential energy behind reality can and must be used in concrete struggles, especially in war and politics. As he said in his book, The Art of War, quote, "Nothing is permanent in life except conflict and change. One either masters the chi of one's opponent or is mastered by it," unquote. If we set aside our Western philosophical bias that dualistically separates matter from spirit, we recognize that Sun Tzu is accurately describing the dance that occurs in any conflict with an adversary. For as he writes, enemies like opposites are mutually dependent on one another, being part of a greater unity and purpose. Thus, enemies are defeated not by their abolition, but by their absorption into a greater whole. Unquote. In short, we can win any engagement not by outnumbering or crushing an opponent, but by redirecting his own essential energy into the outcome we desire. Redirecting. A classical example of the power of such an approach is found in our own campaign in Canada to indict church and state for genocide. That campaign consisted of a few dozen of us in three cities, but it successfully forced Canada and the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches to respond on our terms, by admitting their crime and helping to commence their own disillusion. For by acceding to a new reality, the old matrix called Christian Canada surrendered to us its chi and helped energize our agenda of disestablishing Crown and Church, a process that is now continuing to unfold. This new power alignment is crumbling Canada and laying the basis for a new chi arrangement that we call the Common Law Republic of Kanata. What achieved this victory were not our numbers, but our strategic position, our visible persistence, and our ability to outmaneuver and redirect the chi of the system, armed as we were with an undeniable truth and evidence that kept both church and state constantly fearful and on the defensive. Similarly, but even more stunning, is the other greater victory that flowed from this first one, namely the blow against the Vatican and Rome, at our historic deposing of Pope Benedict on February 11, 2013, by our public conviction of him and other top Catholic officials for the same genocide. The successful mastering by us of a hugely more powerful opponent's chi happened because our small movement deliberately utilized a strategy of guerrilla warfare, which is summed up by Sun Tzu thus, quote, "First, when I am few and my enemy is many, I can use the few to strike the many, because those whom I battle are restricted, being larger and more unwieldy. Their strength thereby becomes their weakness. Second, do not respond to the ground your enemy has prepared for you, but instead shape their ground. Then they have no alternative but to be led by you, as if it was their own idea. Third, hide the time of battle from an enemy, and make what he loves and defends your first objective. By aiming at and seizing what the enemy holds dear, their greater strength and plans are rendered useless, and they must stop and respond on your terms, no matter how small are your forces." Unquote. And so, in this manner, on March 17, 2008, during Palm Sunday services, two of our action groups occupied without warning the largest Catholic cathedrals in Vancouver and Toronto, making headlines across Canada with our demand that the genocidal churches be prosecuted and forced to return the remains of the Indian children they killed. We also announced that we were commencing an international court action to charge Canada with genocide. Less than a month later, the government announced for the first time an inquiry into the missing residential school children. This led directly to the official parliamentary apology just 2 months later, and the subsequent official admission by Ottawa that genocide did indeed occur in Canada. By striking unexpectedly at the Achilles heel of the main instigator of genocide, behind its own lines, amidst its most sacred ritual, we not only shocked and frightened the enemy, but created the field of battle, and forced our opponent in its fear to respond on our terms. We defined the field of battle. Since then, no one in Canada has dared anymore to deny that children were killed in the residential schools and that it was indeed genocide. A few of us thereby reshaped the national narrative, or in Sun Tzu's words, we mastered the chi of an enormous adversary and redirected it on our terms. Similarly, the shockwave that deposed Pope Benedict has continued to spread, forcing four other resignations by top Vatican officers named in our common law court indictment, and compelling an enormous and desperate public relations effort by the present Pope Francis to shore up Rome's collapsing credibility. What is this but living proof of the ability of a small force to absorb the chi of the biggest and oldest enemy imaginable, the Vatican Incorporated? Well, compare these stunning victories by a handful of people with the negligible results of many thousands of protesters standing impotently outside government buildings and waving placards, and thereby surrendering their collective chi once again to their adversary. For the unstated message of any group of protesters to some external power is this: we acknowledge your authority. You have the power, not us. All we ask is that you change things for us. Well, that's not change on the terms of the people, but accommodation to elite rule, regardless of the outcome. This impotence called protest, like voting or going through the courts, is in truth the clearest example of the energy-sucking nature of the machine that relies on such controlled opposition to feed its own chi. In reality, no such diminishing of people's own chi is ever required, for the ability of any size group to capture the chi of the government in any corporate regime has been proven in practice by us and others. In energetic terms, this constitutes a reclaiming of power in order to rebalance chi, whose nature is to disseminate and to be shared equally. This approach is the only sure means of changing the nature of power itself and bringing down tyranny permanently, and not simply changing hats on the heads of different oppressors. And yet, as we noted, understanding this truth doesn't automatically make it happen, for the simple fact that we are a very part of what it is we oppose. The symbiotic nature of chi. It's often remarked, usually as a justification for not getting involved in a radical movement, that all revolutions just end up replacing one tyrant with another. Well, from a distance, history seems to bear this out. The moments where masses of people shake off their chains and govern themselves directly and consciously seem to be episodic and brief. Most of the time, the masses appear to be like a passive herd led around by some elite or another. But this appearance is in fact illusory. People's acquiescence to a regime is not the same thing as them actively supporting it. People will act to change things only when they can see and feel that there exists a working alternative to the status quo. That is, only when they're able to recognize and establish their own new collective chi. But why does this not seem to happen very often? What is the bulwark that holds people back, besides the obvious ones of fear and intimidation? These questions can only be answered in practice by knowing first the symbiotic and interdependent nature of all power and its chi. Just as darkness and light depend on one another and are aspects of the same phenomena, so too are opponents in any war or political change. Even the biblical war in heaven was fought between two types of angels, Lucifer, in fact meaning being of light. Any struggle is ultimately a dance between the same entity wearing different masks. Just as chi, like water, always seeks the lowest and most common ground, so does any conflict. Conscious or not, both sides search for a new symbiosis by which both can survive and prosper. For this reason, it's impossible for any group of citizens to establish a new society within the framework and institutions of the old regime, since all of their thoughts and hopes are conditioned by it. As Frederick Engels observed so accurately following the aborted European insurrection of 1848, men always begin revolutions with their eyes fixed on the past. And the Italian rebel Giuseppe Garibaldi, who briefly overturned the papacy in 1870, wrote, "One cannot secure the support of the people by calling for an overthrow of society, but instead by assuring them that their security will be preserved by the changes we envision." Unquote. Well, not surprisingly, such pragmatic, backward-looking approaches of power-seeking rebels created no new society, and in fact ended up duplicating the regimes they fought. 19th-century European radicals had not read Sun Tzu, nor, for that matter, have most of today's so-called rebels. To establish a new collective identity and chi, we must not resist or combat the old regime, but absorb its own chi. Absorb it, as we did in Canada and at the Vatican. And yet, in practice, old habits of thought and deference prevent even the best of us from doing so consistently on our own terms. I continually experience this within all of the groups I work with. While holding to the vision of a new independent republic based on the common law, our best people will still insist on going into the lawless crown or de facto courts to remedy the latest injustice being done against them or others. They cannot simply turn away from the old regime. Their psychological and energetic dependence on what is familiar runs far deeper within them than they understand, because one's position within the collective symbiosis is largely invisible to the untrained mind. We can't see it. In short, we're all part of a bigger and hidden group mind. The Bible calls it our angel, that can only be nullified by another collective mind. What this means in practice is that regardless of anyone's degree of personal consciousness, everyone seems to be awaiting in trepidation for something or someone else to make the final break and bring in a new regime. Until then, they accommodate and worry about how to protect themselves and others from the present system. It's therefore hardly surprising that our membership within the Republic and common law movement has remained largely a passive and a waiting one, with people's eyes, feet, and every aspect of their life mired in the past, waiting for somebody else's leadership. The only remedy for this immobility is provided collectively through the creation of a new group identity into which we can draw people out of the status quo. And by that moment, when a critical mass is reached, and not only consciousness, but the capacity to act differently emerges among many people. This emergence is always unpredictable, but when it does occur, a huge shift across society happens almost overnight, as history amply demonstrates. And then the new chi arrangement can become an actuality. In many ways, all that we do today is a preparation for the opportunities created by that moment in time, that upcoming window of action, when a new and free society can come into being from the ground up. And to quote Sun Tzu again, "Operations must always be geared to the rapid seizure and exploitation of the key moment of opportunity created in battle, which can never be predicted. The prime purpose of operational commanders is to recognize and act decisively upon such fleeting moments." unquote. The operational commanders, in our case, are the on-the-ground local community organizers whose job it is to build the movement by empowering wider numbers with the idea and reality that they can govern themselves according to a new and higher law, completely separate from the existing institutions. How to do it? Well, in that regard, the convening of local people's assemblies is an expression of this long struggle to establish new collective she, because it puts flesh on the idea that fundamental change lies only in our own hands. For as John Adams said in 1791, the revolution may have been effected first in the hearts and minds of the people, but it took shape in our constitutional conventions, where the people learned how to hold and will power for themselves. Well, our course of action is clear if the words of John Adams are to become part of our very thought and fiber. We must gather in this united vision into permanent alternative assemblies, where we covenant to establish a new form of law and government. But then the real battle will begin. For let's be clear that by creating such a new authority alongside the old one, by drawing the chi of the old regime into our sphere, we are entering into a state of permanent civil war, both politically and spiritually. We're drawing a line and separating ourselves unalterably from the past by actively disestablishing the thing called Canada and Crown Law, or any corporate regime anywhere in the world that poses as government. The firmer our resolve and the more people we draw into our new common law public and arrangement, the more peaceful will be this transition. We can only undertake this monumental step collectively through a new legal and political framework embodied in the people's assemblies. For as legislative bodies, these new assemblies can establish legally the common law courts, sheriff groups, and others that will enforce the laws that are the basis of our new society. The people are the source of all law, government, and sovereign authority. This foundational republican principle means that any group of people, no matter how large, who covenant together under an oath, are a legal body and can formulate and pass laws for themselves. That's why the people's assemblies, once convened and operate continually, are the basis of the new republic. But those conventions have to operate according to this higher and alternative chi consciousness. People, especially Canadians, have to learn freedom by beginning to actually practice it and reclaiming their own lost chi autonomy. The assemblies provide a sure way for them to do so on any matter of community concern that can be discussed and resolved locally. When people feel the power of taking all matters into their own hands, and they see how impotent in practice the existing authorities are, the republic will become real as the old regime crumbles. Now, in conclusion, we began by observing how the present global tyranny is an energy-sucking parasite whose ultimate consequence will be the eradication of life as we know it on Mother Earth. Our purpose of shattering that entity and restoring natural law and life to our world cannot be achieved without recognizing and winning back the essential energy that is drained from us every day through our participation in this global machinery of death. Our very thought and action must therefore be geared towards regaining this chi energy by establishing new courts, assemblies, and communities utterly separate from the old institutions to allow people to leave them once and for all. But first they must leave them in their own minds and hearts. Those of you listeners who will be more than hearers of the word but doers as well are like a sharp point of a spear constantly posed for battle. You will create the first wedge through which many others will follow, provided that you remain sharp, clear, and consistent. Because you have formed the blueprint of a new society, what you do today and tomorrow is of sacred importance for the future of our people. If you waver or backslide, there will be no such future. For to quote the book of Psalms, number 149, which was cited at the trial of King Charles by the English Parliament in 1649, that established the first common law republic, the book of Psalms wrote and inspires all of us with these words: "For you have been set apart to bind the kings of the earth, and bring to judgment the nobles and the wealthy, and to bring to nothing their pride and their power. This is the task given to the righteous remnant, so that all may know the truth and stand within the justice of God." This is Kevin Annett. I thank you.
And we're back. Well, folks, that's some of the substance that we are putting in our training workshops, the common law training workshops, which are being organized as we speak. They've been going on really all over North America and parts of Europe. And they're escalating as more and more people are coming with the kind of stories we heard about the man who is having his children illegally raped, or the people of Pennsylvania who are having their earth and their land legally destroyed by the system that the so-called powers that be. Well, actually, they are not the powers that be. We are in the process of replacing those powers from the bottom up. That's really the purpose of this show and everything that we do. Now, a few little aphorisms before we leave today. Your best teacher is your last mistake. Let me repeat that. Your best teacher is your last mistake. And to struggle, you have to learn hard realism. In other words, see situations and people as they are and not as you want them to be. We keep that in mind when we're talking about all of these struggles, because part of the preparation is to get people active. It doesn't really matter on what issue, but once you start engaging and taking action, you learn from hard experience what you're up against. Not the idealism of sitting around talking about ideas, which can lead in any direction. Anything can be true in the abstract, but it's only when you're engaging with the powers that you learn their nature. You can't engage from over the internet, folks. You can only engage face-to-face with these things and then learn from your experience and generalize the lessons to others. That's part of what we do in the training workshops. If you want to be part of that movement, write to thecommonland@gmail.com. I will write you back directly, unless the email is sabotaged, in which case you can leave a message for me at 386-323-5774. That's in the U.S. 386-323-5774. I pick up messages through that phone system. And also, in closing, I can't resist. We're going to have a few points shared by Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who wrote a very important radical book called The Social Contract in the year 1743. And what he said, listen to this, is the sovereignty of the people cannot and is never surrendered to another. Sovereignty cannot be represented for the same reason that it can never be alienated. The people's deputies in a true republic are not and can never be its representatives. They're merely its agents, acting according to the people's sovereign will, and such agents cannot decide anything finally. The idea of representation is a futile one, created to degrade and dishonor the name of man. In a republic, the people do not have representatives. The very word is unknown. The moment a people adopt representatives, they are no longer free. That is why the cardinal principle of a republic is virtue. For a people's self-governance cannot prevail without virtue and the placing of the general interest above self-interest. Well, that was a good word to end on. But we are going to leave with a very important song about John Brown. Now, Malcolm X, our black brother, once mentioned before he was shot by the FBI, he said, he was asked, well, is there any white man you do trust? And he said, well, I think I would trust John Brown. Because John Brown, that you may or may not know, was a man in 1859 who, a white man, who said, I'm not going to tolerate slavery anymore. He got 19 people together and tried to take over Harper's Ferry arsenal, military arsenal, and arm the blacks to overthrow slavery directly. Now, of course, they hanged him, but his truth went marching on, as we're going to hear in this song. And we're in a very comparable situation today, brothers and sisters. We are all in the condition of slavery. But first we've got to become aware of it, and then we've got to break the chains. So we're doing that on this show. Next week we're going to be back to talk more about how to do it on various struggles that people are going to be bringing forward. If you want to follow our work, do so. Read murderbydecree.com, itccs.org, and write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com. If you want to reach the Covenanters that released that statement going out to the church people this next week, you can write to them at congregationalcovenant@gmail.com. And to remind you folks, next Sunday, commence the fast and separation starting at sunrise, Sunday, October 29th, and leading through to Reformation Celebration Day on October 31st. There will be other actions happening on that day, and we will inform you about that next Sunday. But until then, folks, you stay strong, stay clear, and stay courageous. We are winning, provided we stand on the common law and our own sovereign integrity. And so here we will listen to John Brown on the way out. Until next week, keep it together, folks. This is Kevin Annett. I thank you.
Well, John Brown's body lies molding in the grave. I weep the sons of bondage whom he ventured out to save. And though he lost his life and its struggle to free the slaves, its truth is marching on. John Brown's body lies molding in the grave. John Brown's body lies molding in the grave.